This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
To mama, mama's good to you.
I turn to you like a flower leading toward the sun. I turn to you because you're the only one.
And when I fall down, I have to pick myself back.
This is Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome everyone. I'm Michelle Barber and you are listening to Stand Up Straight, where we aim to provide a vehicle for the allied supporters to stand up for our GLBT&I community, to encourage and create greater inclusion, share stories, give advice, create dialogue or introduce a new way of thinking, but most importantly, to facilitate change toward greater acceptance of our rainbow family in all its shapes and sizes. Thanks for a great afternoon's music and entertainment with Dano and Mason, and to the lovely Beck for the news. I have Clayton across the desk, who may remain silent, maybe not tonight, and the lovely Stephanie across the desk from me. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi, Michelle. So for lots of people in our rainbow community, San Francisco holds a special place. Claimed by some as the epicentre of the worldwide LGBTI community, San Francisco has one of the largest and most prominent LGBTI communities and is one of the most important in the history of LGBTI rights and activism. Tonight on Joy, we have two San Franciscans who, for the past 40 years, have been part of the city's ever-changing rainbow landscape. And together, they're going to share with us tonight some of their tales of the city, with stories of protest movements, flower shows, Armistead Maupin, and life in a city where almost anything goes. So welcome to Stand Up Straight, Kay and Jay Easty.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Can I, before you say anything, Sarah, something really lovely happened as you were introducing them. They've had this gentle touch between them and this beautiful look between each other, this sense of joy. They're sitting in the studio and hearing you introduce them. It was really lovely.
Well, I guess a quick disclosure, Kay and Jay are family. But they're also first-time Joy guests, so they are very special to us. Mm. So perhaps we should begin tonight with a little bit of personal history, as Kay is an Australian and Jay an American. And to put things into context, we probably need to know how you both found your way to San Francisco and why. And Jay, I think we should begin with you.
Well, I went out to San Francisco as I waited to find out whether I was going to be sent to Vietnam. I had been working on the East Coast. I got drafted for a number of reasons. They decided they would not take me then. They'd call me in 6 months, and I thought, well, forget that. And I went out to San Francisco. I started working in a restaurant out there. that turned out to be a very successful operation.
I hate to interrupt, but I just need, you need to put that restaurant in.
It's not just a restaurant.
Sorry.
You need
sorry.
To name it.
That's right. Armistead Maupin would insist on it. It was Perry's Restaurant.
Yes.
From Tales of the City.
Yeah. And Jay, were you not one of the first employees at Perry's?
I was. We had a lot of fun. We built it from, there was virtually nothing on the street. It was a little Italian neighborhood with a couple of shoe stores and a movie theater. And by the time, I guess, some few years later, the whole place was really jumping. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So basically what I did, I would work for 6 or 8 months. I'd go off and ski bum. I'd come back. I'd work for another 6 or 8 months. And at some point, I just realized, I'd graduated university. I'd been out for a while. And I just decided the draft resolved itself. I didn't have to go to Vietnam. And I suddenly said, wait a second, I'm in control of my own life. I need to do something. I need to go to graduate school. So through a couple of sort of serendipitous events, I found myself at Harvard, accepted at Harvard. And it was like, oh, my goodness, how did that work? And so, I put all my possessions in my little Volkswagen and drove across country and found myself in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Okay, and we're going to take a little moment to then interject with Kay, because that is where I believe you two met.
Yes, that's right. We met at Harvard because I had been a teacher in Melbourne and decided we were doing a lot of radical teaching that we didn't quite know what we were doing, so I better go back to school. I applied for Harvard, got into Harvard, and that's where I met Jay. And in that little blue VW, we made our way back across country together.
Did you feel like a pair of rebels or a bit devil-may-care, do you think, in those times?
I think I felt that I really wanted to stay in America at that time, because I noticed as a woman that there seemed more possibilities. This was in the 70s, the early 70s, and I felt very excited about it. And I also felt a bit rootless and fancy-free, as you say.
So, sorry, Michelle. So, in Boston, why not stay in Boston? What was the draw back to San Francisco?
Well, basically, it was Jay's favourite town. He was brought up on the East Coast in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C., and he didn't want to stay on the East Coast. And he already been living in San Francisco and had loved it. He just felt it was his city. Mm-hmm. So he said, by that time I was an illegal immigrant. My visa had expired. So I thought, what the hell? I'm going to San Francisco. And we've never left.
We are going to take a quick break. We're going to come and find out what drew you to San Francisco and what is that so amazing. I'd love to find out what it's like. One day I'd love to visit and I haven't. You are listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy.
Joy 94.9.
are joined in the studio tonight by Jay and Kay, who are some well-travelled guests, but first-time Joy guests. We were chatting before about the San Francisco being your home, and for those keen listeners to Stand Up Straight would realise that the music we just played them was probably not something they would hear very often, but it was called San Francisco Bay Blues by Eric Clapton. Tell us why you selected that song.
Well, we wanted to pick something that was reminiscent of the city that we found when we got there. Mm. And we both love music. Jay is a singer. We were thinking of the Fillmore District, which was so filled with jazz and performances. And, of course, Eric Clapton played constantly in San Francisco. So that just popped into our minds.
And you sing, I believe, Jay, just a little?
I do. I have. I'm taking a recess at the moment because I find that I either miss too many practices or I miss the performance entirely because we're traveling.
And
but I have been singing for the last 20 years with a mixed chorus, an
when
audition
you say
chorus.
Mixed being?
Men, women, straight, gay, black and white.
Tell me what draws you to that environment. Not just the singing, but is it the community, the sense of community?
It is the community. I've made a lot of good friends there over the years, people I really care about. And it really is extraordinary. We sing this is the classical repertoire, and we've sung in Davies Symphony Hall. Mm-hmm. We can be anything from 150 to 225 voices, and it's pretty powerful stuff when everybody's at full voice.
And there's a lot of choirs and variety of music in San Francisco, isn't there?
Yes, there are. And there's some famous gay men's choirs. Yeah. In particular, there's Chanticleer, which is famous and puts out a lot of records. And we've been going to their performances for years. And then there's the Gay Men's Chorus, which is another group, which is fantastic. Mm. They have some wonderful countertenors. They have the full range of voices, actually, and they have very interesting, varied programs.
It seems to be that San Francisco would be the ultimate melting pot. Would you say that too?
Yes, we love the fact that it is. We loved the fact that it was like that when we got there. It seemed extremely mixed. It seemed very tolerant. When I say mixed, the LGBTI community was very strong there. When we first arrived, we lived in a building which had gay. Everybody was gay in the building. We were the only straight couple in the building.
Tell me, how did that feel?
Or do you not? It felt just wonderful. I mean, yeah. We were just very close friends, and we lived through some dramatic city events together.
And I'd like to touch on that a little bit too, because I know that you have witnessed a lot of the community's important history in San Francisco.
Yes.
And probably beginning in the late 70s with Harvey Milk. What do you remember about his influence on gay rights and on the city itself?
Well, Harvey was a character, as everybody knows. He was a very strong personality. And before he was assassinated, we all knew who he was, right? Because he was in the newspapers. And he was the first gay supervisor on the San Francisco City Council.
Sorry, was he accessible? When you say you knew who he was he someone who was accessible? Would you see him sort of wandering around? And
yes, he had a camera shop in the Castro. And we lived near the Castro, just on the borderline of the Castro.
For those that don't know, what is the Castro?
The Castro is a famous gay men's area in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Has a lot of great restaurants and shops and some beautiful housing. And, of course, it's on a hillside or hillsides.
Isn't most of San Francisco.
The whole city is on hillsides. So the Castro is very lovely. So we knew Harvey already and we knew of him. But you could go in and say hello in his shop and he'd chat to you.
Oh, wow.
Was he approachable?
Very. Mm. But he is a very intense person, very high energy.
Mm. And so tell me about the night that he was assassinated, because you have mentioned in the past that you did go out onto the streets along with thousands, I believe, of other San Franciscans.
Yeah. And yes. I'm sure Jay remembers it vividly as well.
I do. The complete shock. I mean, it was
a shock. Terrible.
I learned of it early afternoon. It was a work day, and it was almost that sense of you know, when one of the Kennedys was shot or Martin Luther King was shot, it was just, what? It was what?
No, it was really stunning. And, of course, the mayor was murdered at the same time, George Moscone, who was very gay-friendly.
Yes, he was a big advocate and friend of the community, wasn't he?
Yes, and he and Harvey, Harvey was new in on the Board of Supervisors. So there was a huge, we just had to do something. So, of course, we knew everybody in our building. So we went down to the Castro and we went on a candlelight march. And it was just amazing that just thousands and thousands of people turned up.
Walked from the Castro down to City Hall.
Yes, and it was dead quiet.
Wow.
It was absolutely silent.
Was it only sadness or was it also disbelief? Was it anger?
The anger came later.
Right.
But at that time, it was mourning.
Yeah.
I think it was really the time to mourn. And a lot of people were very stunned and unbelieving.
And he was such a magnetic person and so full of passion for change.
Yes.
And was there that sense of, oh, no, what are we going to do now? This man, this leader has gone, we're going to go backwards with rights and that kind of thing. Was there any that kind of element?
I don't remember that being a conscious thought. I think I don't feel that we felt that there was going to be a backslide.
No.
I don't remember consciously thinking that. Maybe
not really. I don't think I felt afraid that would happen. We did worry after the murderer got a very light sentence and the city just blew up and there was violence and so forth, and none of us went downtown towards City Hall then, and people were very, very angry. But in a way, I think it was a cleansing anger.
Wow.
I mean, they burnt a few cars, and who cares, really? They just expressed so clearly the upset that everybody felt.
Did this motivate you to perhaps be even more active or more sense of social justice at that time than perhaps you might not have had?
Oh, very much so. Mm. I think a lot of people felt that, and in a peculiar way, sometimes activity comes out of a sad event. You know, it prompts new events that are good.
So the first gay pride march was in 1970, and I know that was before you actually arrived in San Francisco. And the 46th one last year, where apparently nearly 2 million people descended on the city from all over the world. What's the city like during what effectively is one of the biggest public parties of the year?
Well, it's madness, actually. But it's kind of controlled madness these days. The police keep everything fairly calm, and it's just lovely. It's huge, though. It's very hard to get a handle on it, and it's very hard to get to see it because there's so many people there.
Do you remember your first march?
Yes,
I do. And how you felt that moment? Did you have a placard? Do you remember?
No placard, but I remember sitting on the curb and just watching this go by, and it was really good.
Yes, really we good watched the parade. Was always led by Dykes on Bikes. Who were naked, actually. So
okay. Well, we have the Dykes on Bikes here in Melbourne, but they're not naked.
That sounds like a bit of a challenge,
perhaps.
They were
naked from the waist up. And in 1974, I think, was the first one I went to. That was a bit of a surprise.
Mm.
But the spirit was beautiful. We had a lovely... It's always... The spirit is very high.
Mm.
And I think after the AIDS epidemic, the virus got underway, I feel that the parade became more serious for a few years, and it was more political. And I think from my most recent experiences, it's got a little happier and more crazy.
So we might come back and talk a little bit about life in San Francisco during the 80s and 90s, during the AIDS crisis, after this quick break.
Have you been avoiding health insurance altogether? Don't spend hours researching and making confusing phone calls. Find a new healthcare policy with ChooseWell and receive a free join.
Be an ally. Talk it out. Educate yourself. Stand up straight on Joy 94.9.
We have the gorgeous Jay and Kay in the studio who are telling us that very, very, very fierce, passionate San Franciscans. would you say? Is that correct? Would that
yes.
be how to describe
yes, you?
You
can call us that.
And have said that they would love to hear a message or a question. So if you'd like to send us a message, you can do so on 0427JOY949, or you can send us an email on air@joy.org.au, just like Stephen has. He says, loving the show, and there's my favourite word again, serendipity. Listening while riding my bike, I'm fascinated by the tales and experiences that these two amazing people are sharing. Much love to you all. Thank you, Stephen. We were talking just before the song about the environment, San Francisco in the 80s, and you were going to have a sort of give us a little bit of a feel of what it was like, and you were mentioning about the AIDS epidemic and how it impacted on you in those times.
Well, we were there in the beginning of the AIDS epidemic, and it was an amazing time, I think, because it brought out both good and bad in people mm-hmm. because nobody knew how the disease was transmitted mm. and the politicians weren't doing a terribly good job of funding research, and so there was a lot of fear. Mm. I worked at a large corporation, and people were saying things like, well, you can't touch their keyboards, or Jay has a reminiscence of his dentist, right?
Going to my dentist, and who had always, you know, just, he was just there, and all of a sudden he had a transparent mask and gloves on, mm. you know, fearing the possible blood being spattered on him.
That would have been commonplace, though. I would that type of behaviour. I mean, would it have been?
Yes, so? I think so. And I guess for me, it was a bit of a shock because you saw a darker side of people. But I felt we just had to hang in and wait and be patient and find out what was going on. And gradually, the research that was being done in France and in America, and I'm sure in here, gradually filtered into the population. So there was more of an understanding how the virus is passed from person to person.
Did you have any friends that were, or that you know of or knew of? Yeah, you did.
Yes.
And
because we were in a gay community. We had a lot of friends, a lot of straight people in San Francisco have gay friends. You know, it's a big mixed community. So unfortunately, yes, we went through that. And I also was affected by the fact that many of my gay friends just lost really even dozens of friends. It was so hard on them.
Were you a bit of a mum figure or a sister figure and brother and dad figure, do you think?
Well, I don't think we're old enough then to be mum and dad.
So
but
we say
tried,
brother and sister.
Yeah, the sister. We tried to support people, look after people, help people who were looking after people.
Yeah, how did you do that?
Well, we knew gay women who were really the support crew for many deathly ill gay men. And so where we could support people, we did.
Mm. So you were the second tier. They were at the coal face, and then you were supporting,
yes,
you're caring
yes,
for the carers,
yes,
which is so important too, because if the carers fall down, you know, then the whole system falls down. So.
Yes, and it was a very delicate situation in the beginning. I think people were very lonely. They were by themselves, and the community, the gay community, the LGBTI community really got together and supported the community. It was just something wonderful to watch.
And do you think that strengthened the city as a city as a whole, having that community support and having, you know, being part of that?
Well, I think, yes. There are so many organisations there now, aren't there? There's social organisations and health organisations, and there's a lot of things. If you people like us, we go to Art for AIDS that raises money for patients and supporting patients in their homes.
I'm wondering, see, here at Stand Up Straight, we're allies. And some people are, I believe you're made that way. You are community aware, you're an activist in some way, shape or form, or you've got a sense of social justice. So I'm wondering what makes you tick from that perspective. Why were you or are you, and you continue for many, many years, have been so passionate about, it would have been so easy for you to run or go somewhere else, or this is too hard or whatever. Why did you stay, and what makes you tick like this?
I think that my sense has always been, when I first saw the Bay Area, having grown up on the East Coast, I came out to get the last of some university credits toward graduation at Stanford Summer School down the peninsula in Palo Alto. Summer in the Bay Area, outside of San Francisco, where it's foggy and cold, was remarkable. I mean, it was like 25 degrees every day, and the sun was out, and I just thought to myself, I'm in heaven. After the humidity and mosquitoes of the East Coast, I'm very ready to discover the Bay Area.
So do you think perhaps that there is some link between harbour cities and sunshine and the gay community? Because Sydney is not dissimilar to San Francisco. And again, it's got a very significant LGBTI population as well. So
I think that may be a good point. I have to say, Sydney may be prettier than the Bay Area. It's a pretty remarkable harbour. But I can certainly see it has that same joie de vivre. It has that same everybody at the beach. Yeah. Not much in the way of clothing. Yeah. You're just out there. You know, just out there.
In your vertical.
You are. Oh, and you know, talking about not much clothing. There was a time when I visited San Francisco a couple of years ago, and we were in a park, DeLorean Park. And there was a lot of nudity there. And there again.
Dolores Park.
Dolores Park.
Yes.
Dolores Park.
Notorious.
Notorious. But there was a lot of nudity there. But at the time, there was some protest movement around nudity. What was that about?
Oh, that's right. Well, it was a bunch of people who liked to get naked and not have any
men.
And it just so happened that they tended to be older and larger.
And unattractive.
And rather unattractive.
And a little grey. That didn't slow them down. And so for a while, they were quite apparent, but especially around the Castro, I have to say. And then the city got a bit fussed about them. So I believe there was a regulation that they were not allowed to take public transport naked. Mm. You had to put your panties on.
And some parents took
and some parents said, "What will I do if my 4-year-old sees them?" Well, nothing. Mm. You know, your 4-year-old will be just fine.
Have an interesting conversation.
Yes,
be great, wouldn't it?
But the movement seems to have faded.
I'm pleased to hear that, and I'm sure I'm sure Addie will be too, because she was probably horrified as a 6-year-old. We are going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to fast forward to more current times. We're going to talk about protest movements of recent times. You're on Stand Up Straight.
Way Out House of Awesome is a social group for LGBTI people aged 12 to 25 in the Macedon Ranges. Run every 2 weeks during school terms at the Macedon Ranges Youth Space in Kyneton. Way Out offers a welcoming safe space for current and new members. For more information, contact Cobourg Community Health Services on 5421 1666. Cobourg Community Health is a Rainbow Tick accredited organisation in the Macedon Ranges. Joy is proud to support this community message.
The Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras is coming to Joy for a weekend-long simulcast across Australia. From next Friday, Chris and Cam host the CNC Drive Factory live from Sydney at 4, then Dylan takes over with countercultured Mardi Gras themed set from 8. On Saturday, Anastasia and Warren host your Mardi Gras breakfast from 7. Macca and Taz present Saturday Magazine from the SBS studios at 9, Michael teams up with Adam Richard to get the party started at 1, Gina, Beck and Dave bring you the parade pre-show from 4, then from 7 p.m. join Dean Akuri and Michael Dalton as they commentate on this year's parade from 7 with live crosses to our roving reporters right on the street. Oh, and that's going to be an awesome day on the radio, plus a heap of programming on Sunday to wind down your Mardi Gras weekend. Keep listening to Joy for more details. Don't miss out on one of the biggest broadcasts Joy has ever undertaken, from March 3rd to March 5th, live on Joy, SBS Radio 3 and across the Community Radio Network Australia-wide. The joy of summer, the joy of Mardi Gras, Joy 94.9.
Dick Leather is a community-based organisation that seeks to support and advance the diverse leather communities of Melbourne and Victoria, made up of practitioners of a broad range of sexual arts.
Dick Leather is a not-for-profit community-operated organisation with proceeds of events directly benefiting the community.
We welcome people of all genders and sexualities.
Join us for Gear Up, a monthly informal catch-up for lovers of leather. Warm up for the weekend, have a drink and meet other like-minded people sharing interests and stories.
For more on Gear Up and Dick Leather in general, visit vicleather.org.au.
A community message supported by Joy.
Hi, this is Adelaide, and you're listening to my mum, Stephanie, and Michelle on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. Say you'll remember
me. Jay and Kay, all the way from San Francisco, are in the studio with us tonight, and Stephanie's next to me. Clayton's across the desk. So if you'd like to send a message in, you can do so on 0427 Joy 949 or send us an email on air at joy.org.au. Now, folks, I don't know if you're a bit not wanting to answer my question and or cleverly avoided it, but I'm just wondering what it is that makes you tick. Why are you an ally and someone else is, and why are you so passionate about human rights and equality when others are not? And I'm wondering, whether have you always been that way all your lives? Is this just how you're made?
I'll jump in on that. When I was confronted with the possibility of being sent to Vietnam, I tried a number of things. I didn't want to have to flee the country. I was determined to stick it out, find a way to make the draft work against itself, and leave me alone. And I started thinking very hard about going after conscientious objection as my reason for not serving.
Wow.
I talked to a draft lawyer. He said, well, you know, you need to document what it is that makes you a conscientious objector. You take, you know, go home and make some notes. And I did. I went home, and I quite amazed myself, because I came up with like 3 legal pages of the Quaker influences that I had experienced through my life as I grew up amongst Quakers outside of Philadelphia. And I'd gone to a Quaker camps for 3 summers, where we'd sit around and have a meditation in the morning. And I started to realize that I was a pacifist. I had no interest in being violent toward other people. And at the same time, I didn't really want people being violent toward me. But it seemed to me, I've always felt that the Bay Area was... San Francisco, in particular, was a lovely place to live. I mean, I've worked down the peninsula. I always am pleased to come back to the city, because it is. It's diverse. It's different. I can't imagine living in a place that didn't have that diversity.
Do you consider yourselves allies, though?
Allies? Well, yes, I do, because Jay's had Quaker influences, and I've always been on the left in terms of movements, or went through the 60s and 70s. And why I'm like that, I'm not terribly sure, except I was brought up in a household that was without bigotry. So I don't think I learnt that stuff at my mother's knee. I just didn't hear it. And I grew up very interested in politics and was in the 70s movements, particularly anti-Vietnam, etc.
Even right up to quite recently as well.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
She's got a big grin on her face, hasn't she, Steph?
We loved getting the photo a few weeks ago of Kay in her little pink beanie at the Women's March. Tell us a little bit about that, because obviously things have changed in the last month, particularly. But tell us a little bit about the Women's March in San Francisco.
Well, I have some very dear old friends in a couple of clubs that I belong to, and we're all on the floor when a certain person was elected and just didn't know what to do next. I had friends in tears, friends in depression. So one of the things that saved us was action. And so the women, the Women's March was just brilliant, and it allowed lots and lots of different people, not just women, men, families, a lot of families, gay and straight people, to come out and express how upset they were. And I did have a little pink pussy hat and I, along with hundreds of other women who were all wearing their little pink pussy hats. And so we all marched, and it was a pouring with rain, and it was very inspiring in San Francisco because there were thousands of people standing in the pouring rain and marching in the pouring rain. So it felt wonderful to be back on the streets.
Well, we have mutual gay friends in San Francisco, and I know that and I know that you have a lot of other GLBTI friends in San Francisco. What's the overall sentiment from your friends about the new administration?
Well, as you know, Steph, a couple of our friends are very worried about the new administration and even afraid of it. And it seemed to be doing, it doesn't, that gayness was not an issue up to today or yesterday morning when we heard or read in the New York Times that Trump has changed some of Barack Obama's regulations regarding transgenders' youth of bathrooms in schools. And so that's very worrying, because I frankly think, and I'm not an expert on this, but I'm always filled with opinions, that Donald Trump doesn't care what happens, really doesn't care, but he will bow to pressure from the extreme right. And that's the first sign we've seen. So it's very important to be active. There's just hundreds of resistance groups. I think if you look on the cover of Time, it's a bit refreshing. It is not complimentary to Donald Trump, this week's issue of Time.
Oh, I haven't heard anything about that. What
you have to have a look, because the press is getting very upset because he's threatening the freedom of the press.
Do we understand over here what you're going through, do you think? Do we have an idea, a bit of an idea?
I think you do. I we're sometimes struck by how much political information is outside of America. A lot of you, a lot of American citizens do not have the same information that people have in France and in Australia, in a lot of other countries. And I, you know, and they're watching America very closely, because right behind the presidential election in America come elections in France, elections in Germany. It's like it's not, it doesn't seem like it's a very attractive scene out there, and we're all worried. And I think that a lot of people look to America to see, you know, what's the bellwether, what's happening, which way is the wind blowing. So,
and in San Francisco, what's the mood there more specifically? Does it echo the rest of the country or a major part? The country.
No, I think, you know, San Francisco's very, very blue. What was it, 90% of
90%
San Francisco voted
for Hillary.
Did not vote for Trump.
No.
Yeah, so it's a very, it's a bubble. We live in a beautiful bubble, I believe. But I no longer believe that quite as much as I did before, because there's so much protest. There's protest in places like Virginia, for instance. So I think it's waking up, especially with the attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which affects people all over America, affects gay people, affects straight people, particularly affects poor people.
Something like 50% of Americans did not know that Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act were one and the same.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I'm not a politically motivated person, and I don't have a lot of interest in politics. But the interesting thing that I find for myself is that I'm now wanting to learn more and, you know, about a country that's on the other side of the world, because my GLBTI community, I feel, over there is going to be affected. And maybe that's what's piquing my interest or my concern. I don't know.
Yes, it's a worry. I think Steph follows American politics very closely.
I do. And, I think that one of the good things that has come out of this new administration, probably the only good thing so far, is that, you know, journalists have sharpened their pencils. And the reason that I'm so riveted, I mean, I've always been interested in American politics, but there's just some amazing journalism coming out of the States at the moment, some great podcasts, some great news articles. You know, you've got to look at where you're getting your information from, sure, but there is some fantastic stuff coming out of America. And I think it is really relevant. And I think it, you know, America is, you know, probably the most important country to us. As an ally, and you know, we need to know what's going on there. But it was interesting because during the election, we talked a little bit about voting, and I particularly remember an email that you sent, Kay, where you outlined some of the things that you had to vote on in the election and the process. And, you know, we're always flabbergasted here in Australia that so few people in America vote. And perhaps you can explain, you know, why that is, because after reading about this process, I thought, God, no wonder people don't vote.
Well, I'm a dual citizen, Australian American citizen, and Jay and I went through this process. You get the bottom line is I voted on 54 propositions and about how many people? 15 people?
Probably.
15 people. And you get a voter information booklet that is about an inch thick. And you have to read through it to understand who you should vote for, which is actually more straightforward than you would think. But there are propositions on there that affect our lives, both put on there by the state and by the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. And they're all about money. They're often about gay rights. They're about all kinds of things. So you have to read the two and the four, and you have to make a decision yourself. How are you going to vote when you get in there? You do not have to vote on all of them, so you could walk into the polling booth and vote on one thing. But, you know, we're pretty conscientious, so we slog through the whole thing and then we go in there and vote. Now, what happens is I think a lot of young people, people who speak English as a second language, are very put off by this huge ballot. It's intimidating.
Yeah,
it is.
We've actually had a question come in, and thank you for your message, Brad. He says he finds it interesting that the voter turnout in the USA is so low. I wonder if they all voted as we do here, the result may have been very different, and we will never know. But it's a great question. Thank you, Brad. We're going to go for a quick break and come back and wrap up. You're on a Stand Up Straight on Joy.
You're listening to Michelle on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
She's my mum.
Thank you for joining us tonight on Stand Up Straight. We are almost at the top of the hour, and I'd just like to say a very special thank you to Kay and Jay for joining us tonight and for sharing some of the some of your fantastic history of San Francisco. It's been, for me, really enlightening, and I know for...
And a real pleasure to have you in. And you've got these joyous faces, and you would be absolutely and utterly at home here in Joy any day. So you can tune in and listen from the other side of the world.
Well, it is an annual trip that they make to Australia. So we'll
same time next
year. Same time next year.
Chapter two.
You won't be able to keep us on off the mic.
And so definitely,
thank you. And we think of ourselves as your allies.
That's lovely to hear. So thank you. It's been a really lovely time meeting you. So the rest of the evening on Joy, we've got Family Matters, who are talking... Cover your ears. Sperm and all other stuff tonight. And The Woods at 9 o'clock, The Fabulous Bear Show. We have a great show lined up for you next week. We have a friend of mine, Daniel, and his father, who to say they've had a challenging relationship, all things related to religion and many, many other things. So that's going to be a very moving story of Daniel and reconciling with his father. So I really look forward to having them in the studio next week. Beck will be back next week. Clayton across the desk, thank you very much. Thank you, Stephanie, next to
thank
me.
Thank you, Michelle.
And as they all say...
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.